It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 296. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions or suggestions for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. Haven't had any voicemails in a while. Phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. And I just re-upped that phone number with Skype because it expired, or it was going to expire, so I extended it for another year because I've had that phone number for so long. Also, got the wiki, mtswiki.com, where you can get links to all the archives and appearances that I do on other shows. Also, another website is mhs.me. That is my collaboration site where anytime I am on a show or a guest somewhere, I will link the audio there. So this way, it doesn't, if you just want the Mike Tech Show, you're not going to be bothered with some of the other audio. But if you really like hearing my voice, well, mhs.me will have anything that I do, including tech vets, appearances on the Great Tech Debate, Computer America, on and on and on. Anytime I am on the air, I will have an archive and record it, and it's available in that feed on the website. Tonight actually represents my 5th year anniversary in podcasting. That's right. 5 years ago, I started the Mike Tech Show. Now you figure, well, geez, Mike, why aren't you having a big celebration? Well, as you heard in the beginning, it's show 296. We're so close to 300. I figured, let's wait and I'll have a great party for show 300. And guess what night that falls on? If I don't do any extra shows between now and show 300, it will fall on Thursday evening, April 1st. How fitting is that? So April 1st will be show 300. And it'll be a blast. I'll have prizes. I'm already starting to build up some prizes. So we're going to have a great time. Lots to give away. Lots of fun. Stay tuned for that. Also, I was invited to speak again, and I have a great topic. The Trenton Computer Festival is April 24th and 25th. And on Saturday, April 24th at Trenton State College at 10:15 a.m., I will be giving an hour presentation on how to increase your PC performance for free. Now, you've heard me talk about the utilities in the past. As a matter of fact, Carrie and I did a great show early on in Tech Vets, how to use the Glary utilities and PC Fixer. Well, that's what that's going to be about. And I will have hands-on demonstration on showing everybody, because, you know, there's a lot of people who have no idea that those programs exist and how to improve performance. And it's a great way for me to promote the Mike Tech Show and Tech Vets, my consulting in the area. If you are in the area, please come out and say hello and hang out at the Trenton Computer Festival this April. So looking forward to that. And let's see if I can get a camera and get that show recorded, and then we'll have to post that up as a video. Next week, I have consulting all day Thursday and Thursday night. So the Mike Tech Show will be on Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern time next week. And we hope that there'll be a Tech Vets on Tuesday night. Now, Carrie and I recorded this past Tuesday live on Ustream on this channel. We recorded Tech Vets Show 42. Had a disaster with the audio at the end, but everything was backed up because I have my backup recorder, so everything was saved, no problem. I'm in the process of editing that. I have had no time since Tuesday night. I promise Friday night I will get that audio up. Carrie and I are going to try to get back on the horse and keep doing that on Tuesday nights live. So look for that. That'll be great. So next week, look for me Tuesday night, Tech Vets, 8 o'clock. Wednesday night, Mike Tech Show. You've heard me talk about GoToMeeting for almost 5 years. They have been a sponsor here for 5 years. But do you know why I think it's the best online meeting service? It's because it's so easy to join meetings. It has one flat rate per month, the service, and you can hold unlimited meetings. It supports voice over IP. It has a great tool set that will help you present. You get to show your screen on everybody's system. You can easily hand off presenting. You can use the highlight tools to circle what you're talking about, make annotations on the screen. It's a great service, and you can try it free for 30 days right now. But you got to go to gotomeeting.com/techpodcast. That's gotomeeting.com/techpodcast for your free 30-day trial. Before I dive into just a great pile of email, and I mean some great questions and comments, I want to talk about a utility called GSyncIt. It came up in the chat a few months ago. Maybe it was a few weeks ago, but I remember writing it down that someone mentioned it's a great way to sync Outlook with Google. And that is something I needed to do this week. So I purchased the utility. It was just $14.99, and it will enable you to sync everything that you're doing in Outlook. If you're an Outlook maven like me, because I have to be, well, I also live on Google and Gmail, and I need to be able to sync that. Now, I think there are some free ways to do this, but I'll tell you, this utility is really nice. Now, they've just updated their version since I think I got it Monday, and it's now Thursday, and they've already had an update. I downloaded it. I didn't get a chance to apply it, but this update supports Office 2010 64-bit. Remember that now that Office 2010 is going to be coming out, and they have a 32-bit and a 64-bit version. If you go 64-bit, any add-ins to your 64-bit version of Office, the add-in will have to be 64-bit. So it was very good to see that they've already jumped on providing support for 64-bit Office, because that's the way we want to see applications go. We want to be 64-bit for the operating system. We want all the apps to be coming out now 64-bit. Any add-ons or utilities, we want to see 64-bit, so we can just keep pushing the performance limits of our hardware. As I did Tuesday night, I'll tell you, I can't believe that I crashed my Windows 7 64-bit system for the first time by having three cameras, two of them going live at the same time, Audacity. And it's interesting that Audacity was the one that first crashed. He hung up and I noticed it wasn't moving anymore. It wasn't recording, but everything else seemed to be working. Carrie was still in the middle of talking, and so I couldn't interrupt him. I wanted him to finish that thought. And I let it keep going, and then finally there was just horrible buzzing, and then the whole thing locked up. That's when I just had to hit the button and power off. I hit the limits on, really pushed it with what I was trying to accomplish on my system. I guess I have to start taking a look at the resources with that, and especially with multiple cameras going and all the audio. We may have to offload some of the video to another computer, just like I offload a lot of the audio to the Mac that sits beside me. Also could be, this is a beta version of Audacity, and may have to, you know, take a look into that. So I'm still not sure exactly what was happening. So now to just wrap up on that tool for Outlook, it's called GSyncIt, and the link will be in the show notes. The first email is very appropriate. Lou wrote me, who's the moderator in the chat, and he hosts a great Star Trek podcast over at loutrekshow.com. And Lou uses MIRC as I do for my chat, for any IRC chats. One of the things that has bothered us, and it's so great that now it's not bothering me anymore, if you take the defaults and you use MIRC, by default, anybody who's entering and leaving the chat, and sometimes we just get lots of people coming in and out, it puts a message that someone logged in, someone did this. And for the life of me, I could not figure out, even going into tools options, I could not figure out where they were, and I was missing something. And Lou was kind enough to post this question on a forum, and someone replied, and I'll have a link to it, and it says, this is how you make this work. You go to, in MIRC, you go to tools options, but when you go down to IRC options, you just highlight IRC, there's another button that I must have kept missing called events. That brings up another box where you can set all these alerts to hide. And once you do that, all of those changes that are happening with everybody coming in and out of the chat, those references are hidden. And now they're not annoying. And sometimes in the chat, I will lose the thread and the thoughts of what's happening. You do not see them normally in the chat if you are on Ustream's chat because they're hidden from you. But when you're using MIRC, we get everything. And it's very nice to have that all cleaned up. So, Lou, thank you for taking the time to research that and get an answer. I really appreciate it. And it has already helped me. Okay, and I hope it's helped you. Now, remember, MIRC is not a free IRC chat client. There's some great ones, XChat, Turbo IRC. There's some really good free ones, but I'll tell you, I really like MIRC. I'm a creature of habit. I've been using them for years and years and years, that program. You have to pay some money, but it is worth it. It's not a lot of money, and it is well worth the cost. I think it's only like $10. Okay, this is from Alan, regular listener, and he says, I have heard you mention your love for TabMix Plus. Oh, yes. Great add-in for Firefox. I added it to Firefox because I wanted to manage the many tabs I keep open every time I use Firefox. I did not find any information managing many tabs. I am looking for grouping and hibernating of tabs I keep open, but only use a few times throughout the day. Will TabMix Plus do this functionality? Absolutely. Thanks for your help and the great shows. When you use TabMix Plus, the first thing you do is load up all the tabs that you want, and it's called a session. When you click Tools, you now have an option called Session Manager. In Session Manager, you can click Settings, but more importantly, you can save this window, which is the window and all the tabs. Now, if you have multiple instances of Firefox running with multiple tabs, that's called all windows, and you can save it all. And could you imagine with one click just bringing all those tabs up? The reason why I like it so much is when I am preparing for shows that I have lots of links, sometimes I work the show based on my tabs. And what I'll do is I'll save that session as the show number. And sometimes as I'm preparing for a show, like let's say next week's show 297, during the week I come across different, you know, links that I want to share. What I'll do is I'll bring up MTS 297 session, add more tabs to it, and then resave it. So now when it comes showtime, before the show, I launch Firefox and I say, Session Manager, I pick a save session, comes right up. Alan, I hope that helps you, and that's the way I use it. Now, there's a lot of other tab options, but I'll tell you, I use it exclusively for the Session Manager. This is from Chris. Hi, Mike. Like you, I'm a fan of Avira Antivirus, and in many ways prefer it to Avist and AVG. The fact that it has so few processes running in memory is its biggest appeal for me. I heard you say you get a pop-up screen when you update the definitions. Yes, that's true. Well, this nag screen can be simply disabled without affecting the program. I found this guide online a while back. The instructions for Vista should work with Windows 7. I have that link, and I want to thank you very much, Chris, for that. so we can get rid of the nag screen. I know a lot of people will complain and say, Mike, the nag screen is how the author gets compensated. Let your conscience be your guide on that tip. This is from Dave, and this is a question for the show. Hey, Mike, it's been a long time since I've written in, but I assure you that I haven't missed a single episode. Having been a listener since your episodes were in the early teens, you were one of the first podcasts I've ever listened to and haven't stopped since. I'm running into a bit of an issue and figured I'd tap into the exchange experience of you and my fellow listeners. I have a client who's running Exchange 2003, and there are varied versions of the Outlook client on the network, mostly a mix of 2003 and 2007. A new user is getting an odd message whenever he invites a bunch of people to a meeting through the calendar invite. He receives an error message stating, "Your message did not reach some of all of the intended recipients." This in and of itself isn't confusing. The recipient that it lists no longer works at the company. What's odd was that he wasn't listed as an invitee. The recipient in question no longer has an AD account or mailbox. The recipient in question was the assistant, and I think this is the key, to one of the people who was included in the calendar invitation. However, in looking at their mailbox rights, the rogue recipient is no longer there, which of course makes sense since their network account is gone. Here's what happens though. In Outlook, you at the client level, you can assign delegations on calendar and permissions. I think that's what's happening. Yes, that network account is gone, but I bet you there's some delegations or something that was assigned at the client level that has to be removed. That's just something that just popped into my head. And I remember this exact problem where I worked for a long time as a network manager. And I remember the desktop team having this as a problem. And I'm trying to, I forget what the solution was, but I want you to go to the workstations of all the people that were involved in that message and take a look at their settings in Outlook and how they're setting up the delegation and the rights to their mailbox, particularly the calendar. I must be missing something obvious here. No? What am I overlooking? What else could the recipient be referenced? Where else could this recipient be referenced? I think that's it. I hope it is. So thanks for the great information week after week after week after week. Dave from California, thank you so much. If anybody else has any ideas, email me so we can get to Dave and help him out there. Dave, let me know if what I suggested fixes the problem. Now, if you remember last week, I had that great email from Bob that I read. He wrote me back and he says, "So I was listening to your show at about 4:30 this morning, and what a nice surprise. I was quite honored that you chose to share my rant response email with your listeners. Not because I am looking for any kind of personal acknowledgement. Rather, it gave me goosebumps to know that thanks to you, my thoughts at least stand a leveraged chance of reaching out to other human beings and perhaps helping them in some small way to do a better job at leaving the world better than they find it. Even if it makes only a tiny impact, but the impact is positive, then it's working. Try it yourself sometime, and you will be amazed. Thanks for giving voice to my thoughts and sharing them with others, Mike." Thank you so much. Thank you, Bob, for following up with me again. That's exactly how I feel when a listener writes me and thanks me and says, "You know, Mike, I think I got this job because of you," or "I've done better in my job because of the tech tips that you're doing," or "Show 129 that I did on how to prepare a resume, how to prepare for the job interview." And I receive so much response for that. I feel that way, that if I've helped one person, wow, then I've accomplished something. If I can help more than that, which I'm trying to do, it just makes me feel even better. This is from Dave. This is the same Dave from the last email. Hey, since I just sent a question, I figured I'd also contribute a great tip for the show. While this application isn't new, it has recently saved me quite a bit of time while dealing with server migrations. The Microsoft File Server Migration Toolkit is a fantastic application from Microsoft to help migrate shared data from one server to another. Copying data is easy, but when you have an organization, large or small, that relies upon shared folders and special permissions, group or user-based, set on those shares, then replicating those rights could be very, can be very easily become a very tedious proposition. The Microsoft File Server Migration Toolkit allows you to query a source server for all shares and then set up a target location to migrate those shares to. Within the process, it will copy the data, stop the share on the source server, and set it up on the target server for you while migrating all the special permissions associated to the respective shares. By default, it renames the share and appends the source server's name at the end of the share name, but that's easily configurable on a per-share basis. Personally, I prefer to leave the share names as they were before, so my work afterwards simply comes down to making as easy a change in the end user's login script. And since I prefer to use VBScript for my login scripts, that entails making a change to just one variable. Here's the link, and I hope other admins find this as useful as I have. That is awesome. So many people have asked, how do you test? What do you do? What a great project. Set up two virtual servers, set up some shares on one, set up some files, and then pull out the Microsoft File Server Migration Toolkit and actually practice moving the shares from one server to another. Do you know how many admins don't even have that experience? And you can be doing that at home, and you can reference that, and you can reference that in a resume, or when you're talking to someone in a job interview, that you've been able to do server migrations and you mention specifically some of the tools that you used. Speaking of that, if it's not the next show, then it's going to be one coming up. I am going to update and dedicate a show, and I've been getting a lot of feedback on this, on how to do the perfect resume. And I'm in the process of interviewing to help my client hire a senior network engineer. And as I'm doing that, I'm thinking, as I'm seeing these hundreds of resumes that are just brutal. They're just brutal. It just brought to my mind that, you know what? We need to do another session on writing and preparing the resume, where I spent a lot of time on show 129 on how to prepare for the job interview. But the resume is what gets you the interview. Because remember, that's all resumes for. Resume has one purpose: to get you an interview. That's it. I'm going to help you out, and I'm going to dedicate a show to that. And I've already been putting lots of notes together, so look for that coming up. You are not going to want to miss it. And it's one of those shows that you are going to want to share with anybody, and especially now in this economy, who is doing a job search. And I don't care whether it's tech or not, it's going to apply to anybody. This is Network Adapters from Buyer Brown. Hi, Mike. Hope all is well. I would like to ask you about network adapters. In my study of networking, I have decided to first look and study a simple peer-to-peer network made from three workstations running Windows XP Pro. One workstation will have files to share, the second workstation will have a printer connected to share, and the third will have music on it to share. The fourth, I would like to act as a router. No. Do not try to make a computer a router. There's no need. What you want is a switch, You don't need a router. A router routes two different networks. And so let me help you out. If you had a network that was 192.168.10.whatever, and then you had another network that was 192.168.20.whatever, and you need those two networks to communicate, then you have to have what they call a router between the networks to help route the traffic from one subnet to another. You don't need to do that, not with a computer. So I hope that that helps you. I know that a computer can be configured to act as a router. So how many network adapters can a workstation computer running Windows XP Pro have? Well, you can have as many as you want. And you certainly could put two network cards in there, one to the one network, one to the other, and then configure software to route it. But you're not going to ever be asked to do that. I have never, ever with any of my clients, any of my... would have ever done that with a computer, not even to simulate routing. Is that going to help you? I got some better advice here coming up. Side note, I really wish someone would make virtual routers for training purpose when working with a virtual lab like the one I am building. Buyer, you're not going to believe this, but I happen to know a gentleman who is a Cisco just genius, actually wrote a utility that creates a virtual router and a virtual environment that you can play with virtual routing. I have to go back deep into my old emails and find the link for this. I promise I will find it. It may take me a couple days, but I will find the program name, and I got to remember the person's name. I know the company he works with, and it's been a long time since I talked to him, and I'll tell you what, if I have a chance tomorrow, I'm going to get him on the phone. I know I have his business card, and I will call him, and I'll say, hey, remember that program that you wrote and you shared with me on this? There's some great tools out there. It's going to be like Router Sim or something like that. I forget what it's called, but there is a utility. So great question. And I'd rather you play with that than go down the path of building one yourself. And although good experience, I remember building my first firewall and router out of Linux way back when, you know, you couldn't buy these little routers that you can for 10 bucks. And I built one myself just for the experience years and years ago with an old 486 system, and I threw Linux on it, and I think it was Red Hat, and you know, I built my own firewall and router using IP chains, and it was great, and it's great experience. So I don't want to defer you from some of the experience that you're going to embark on, but let me guide you, which is what you're asking for, and this is perfect. After I create a virtual peer-to-peer lab, I am going to then upgrade it to a server-based network using Windows Server 2003. Buyer, I'm right with you there. That's great. With one domain controller and another server that will be later upgraded to another domain controller, just like you told me to do, absolutely. Then I will upgrade the whole server network to Windows 2008 network. Oh, this is beautiful. Document going from 2003 to 2008 and what that process is, because that will be very good experience for potential small clients who have not yet upgraded to Windows 2008, and you now have earning potential of going through that process. Okay, it's going to be very, very important, and it's just another notch in your belt as you advertise or talk about that to someone, how you can help them. And a buyer goes on, what do you think of this plan? Do you like it? I absolutely like it. I really like how you're approaching this. And I think it's very important. And I really like it. Also, on one of the recent past shows, someone else said that they wanted to create a virtual lab as well. Yes. Can you introduce me to this person? You know what, buyer? I've gotten like 5 emails asking about that. We could create a whole group of people who are in the that want to create a lab and do this. And I keep saying this, and it just keeps stacking up. With my consulting during the day, I don't have time to do half the shows I want to do because I have so many great topics. And this is another one, which is from soup to nuts, setting up your own lab for training purposes and for furthering your education and career and getting experience, which I think is awesome and the way to do. I give little nuggets and tidbits throughout many shows, but I've never done a dedicated show to it. So people are asking me, like, which shows are they? And I'm like, you know, they're sprinkled around a lot of shows. So I don't have a definitive answer, but let's see. I would love to study with him since we both are studying the same thing. Please share my email with anyone who would like to study with me, and I would love the company. And you know what? I will do that, buyer. As always, Mike, God bless. Thank you so much. And also, please tell Mr. Holzman I said thank you for all he does and his kind words. I absolutely have. Thank you again for such great participation in the show. Your great recordings that you have done, that I have played, everything. Just thank you so much. All right, let's keep going. This is Freddie. Hi, Mike. I ran across a customer that has a unique problem. He is a young man in the Air Force and uses a card reader with a data card to access his Air Force network. He told me at his work, this is done using Windows Server 2007. Well, it has to be 2008 or 2003 because there's no such animal as Windows Server 2007. Okay. The card reader doesn't really have an issue. I think it's the way he wants to manipulate the software or manipulate Windows. What he wants to do is have the card reader set up on his personal laptop just like at work. What he wants to accomplish is having the card reader give him a login screen at the startup or login screen on Windows. In other words, if you password protect your user profile on Windows, when you log on to your user profile, it requires a password. He wants to have the option for his card reader to have the data card in and to type in his PIN number and be online on his secure network. I told him I did not know if this was possible without running a server or security program on top of Windows, kind of like Novell, for example. I'm getting confused here, so I'm going to have a suggestion. I don't know much about servers. In addition, he is trying to set this up on a laptop running Windows 7 64-bit Home Premium. Well, right off the bat, he cannot properly connect to a domain and a server. You can attach to shares, but you cannot be part of the domain with Windows 64-bit Home Premium. You have to be Windows 7 Home Premium. You have to be Windows 7 Professional. If you were in Vista World, you have to be Vista Business or greater. You have to be Windows 7 64-bit Professional. Now, that could be one of his things, which I also mentioned to him that most likely home versions are set up with very little administrative rights and permissions and limited to basic networking options due to no graphical interface installed unless you run Professional or Ultimate. Well, that's not totally true. But you get the point. It's the fact that you want to be able to announce your system and make it part of the domain so it can take advantage of the security and of the settings. Well, I did some research on the Microsoft TechNet pages on setting up a card reader, which I included a link below and towards the bottom titled Logging On with a Smart Card. It explains a way to do this, and it seems that this is built into Windows. Of course, the biggest difference is that this information is rather old. They explain this using Windows 2000 Professional, but it seems that it can be possible. It mentions that at the Windows login screen to press Control-Alt-Delete and at the same time to signal a secure attention sequence, a SAS, which would allow the user to type in a PIN with the card inserted in the card reader to access. Do you know if this would work on Windows 7? Absolutely. If you have Windows 7 compatible hardware card reader and that there's a driver, that's really the key. And then I have a feeling after reading this that if he had Windows 7 professionally, yes, hopefully 64-bit wouldn't matter. I don't think it does unless they don't have a 64-bit driver for the card reader. What do you think? As far as the hardware, I have checked all that out, and it shows to be working properly with current drivers from 11-2009. Could not find any firmware updates. He has successfully set it up with certificate enrollment. The card reader is made by SCM Micro model SCR3310 version 2. He said he had also tried contacting the manufacturer, but said he could not find anyone that spoke English and did not know what he was talking about. My only option right now is to take a laptop I have that has Windows 7 Ultimate and set it up on my laptop to see if it will work, and to wait for your words of wisdom. You are the guru of servers and networking, so I'm thinking this might be an issue also. Thanks. Now, he has a TechNet article. I have never used a card reader to access a network like you're trying to do. Two things. I want to know, what is the real server version that he's accessing? Is it Windows Server 2003 or is it Windows Server 2008? And we're going to have to make sure that this is all set up properly. He absolutely needs Windows 2007 Professional, the 64-bit, with the right driver. There's no question in my mind, he absolutely has to do that, just like you have Ultimate. Beyond that, does anybody out there have experience with this kind of setup, and can you shed some light with some tips here? And I will absolutely, you know, pass this on. And let me know how you make out. I think by setting up Professional first, I think you're going to make some great headway where maybe this will work once he's truly on the domain. This is from Didier, and it's a he has responded to my, you know, the events with my mailman experiences. He says, "Hey, Mike, just listen to your postman rant. I suggest a tit-for-tat tactic. He's clearly not flexible and sticking to the rules, so I suggest you do the same. Research to what the rules you must adhere for your mailbox. Select your type of mailbox and its location to annoy your postman as much as possible while sticking to the rules. Cheers, Didier." I have already set up my new mailbox, and as funny as that is, and as much as I would want to do that, and every mailman who wrote me is now ready to throw something at the screen or whatever they are as they're listening to this, I would never do that, because in the end, my mailman holds all the cards. He is in control. He has me by the you-know-what, and there's nothing I can do. So I don't want to tick him off, because he's in control of my mail. And who knows what he would do if maybe he's like, "Ooh, this looks like a check." Remember, that's how a lot of my clients pay me, via mail. I get medication through the mail. I don't want them to be misdelivered or accidentally lost. And since he is in such control, I guess I just have to roll over and eat it the way he's going to serve it up. And sometimes you have to know when to do that and when to give up and not fight back. I'm just going to take my losses, lick my wounds, and turn the other cheek, and we're not going to make them mad. So, but I appreciate the suggestion. I thought that was very good. I still have a large stack of great email, and I also have some independent music. But before we do that, everybody always asks me, I would like to expand my client base. I'd like to make more money. Well, how many people do you know have laptops out there that are broke? Something's wrong. And it costs a lot of money to get them fixed. Steve Cherubino has the greatest set of videos, the laptop repair videos. The link is on my website. You can use the code MTS and get another 10% off and buy this for under $50. You can't lose. On your first repair, you're going to make more than that and still save your customer money, or that person you're fixing it for. Maybe it's a laptop that's just been laying around that, you know, you haven't been able to get it working and you don't want to spend the outrageous money it's going to take to have it examined, this is the way to do it. Also, if you are in the market for building that tech repair site, well, Steve's got another set of videos and I have a link, and you know what? You're going to save 10% on that. And that link is to get an education on how step-by-step to build your tech repair website. Professional looking, how to use the AdSense properly. It is the way to go. Check them out. Now, I have some music, and since I had no time to search for specific independent music, like I'd like to go on GarageBand and find something unique and something that, you know, I haven't heard that might be new. Well, when I don't have time, I go to my tried and true artist, and this is one of them. I hope you enjoy this. This is Liz Longley, and I'll Be There.
Firecracker on the loose, she's gonna make her big debut. Watch her as she owns the crowd. She grew up here two blocks from me. Together we had one big dream, and now she's gone and made it all.
That is Liz Longley, the song I'll Be There, and I'll have a link to her website, which is just lizlongley.com. I want to thank everybody for downloading, subscribing to the show, for hanging out in the chat with me, and watching me live on Ustream. I really appreciate it. Don't forget, continue to use that Amazon link. I really appreciate it. Anybody you know, anything you're buying on Amazon, come use my link. I so appreciate that. Thank you so very, very much. That's it. I will talk to you next week. Remember, the live show Wednesday at 8 o'clock. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.